Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I must have been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Lads, I can't believe we're into permutations already. For God's sake, two games in and we're now going to discuss in part two about what teams need to do to make semi-finals. I was just thinking last year, Brendan Devaney, Laois drew with Roscommon away and Laois beat Armagh in the first two games. We'd be in the semi-finals already if this year. It's the wrong year for us. When we have it this year, we've lost the first two games.
Surely, Willie, it's a bit mad, eh? I mean, up in our Ulster section here, literally everybody can go up and everybody can go down almost scenario. Well, sorry, go on to a semi-final or a relegation playoff. So it's all down to last day. It's a bit of excitement. How much teams are bothered about it, it's very hard to quantify, particularly from our Ulster perspective here, Willie, with the championship is coming down the line. And particularly, I suppose, listen, not just because I'm a Donegal man, because Donegal are out in the preliminary round. And should they get into the semi and win it, the final obviously won't be played. It'll be split between the two teams that are in the final, and such is the pressure on the season.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Like, Kildare well in the mix this weekend. Laois and Kildare, Johnny. Again, we'll get to it in part two. Brendan, I was kind of giving out about these permutations. At least Brendan's kind of putting more of a positive spin on it. Something to get excited about after two games.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at a positive that Kildare could relegate Laois at the weekend.
Relegation playoff, buddy.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, but look at it. It's hard to believe, you know. You're looking at the first game, the second game, and you're thinking, oh, maybe a bit of form here, or you're looking at different players maybe. Yeah, I think another game or two and he's back in up and running. All of a sudden, bang, you know, it's you're looking to sort out the different permutations and stuff like that. So I suppose that's reflective of the year. And, you know, we're funny creatures, us GA people, you know. 2 months ago, we just couldn't wait to get it back. And now we're thinking, oh, it's not, well, I know we're back, but it could be done better. Do you know that sort of stuff?
That's more me than GAA fans.
Yeah, I think you're rubbing off on me a bit as well, buddy.
Come here, on a more positive note, Brendan. So Leitrim are heading to Antrim. Longford are heading to Fermanagh. Donegal are heading to Armagh. And Monaghan are heading to Tyrone. And what do those four games have in common? If you can get your hands on a ticket from Donegal, if you've a buddy from Armagh, you can drive to the match, you can get a pint before, 3 or 4 pints before if you want, a bite to eat, you can come home nice and merry, someone drive you obviously, and you can have a great day at a match. It seems so long ago that this is absolutely possible.
Yeah, some clamber, Willie. I suppose we used to call the six counties occupied six, now we're calling them the vaccinated six. fair play to Bojo and the crew, they've got together. I even sneaked them to get me jab, Willie. I'll explain that one day later, so I'm good to go as well. It's party time again, but no, listen, somebody back, I mean, we've seen actually the Premiership, even though it's a small amount of fans in, well, it makes some difference to it, because we have got used to it, obviously, now, being at games, just covering the last couple of games and Donegal matches. You are used to the way things are. you've almost forgotten about it a small bit. So it's amazing what a few fans can bring to it. And actually, looking back to Ulster final when Donegal played Cavan, I don't know, many Cavan officials were technically in there, but they were going absolutely ape. And it actually created a lot of atmosphere, even from them, whatever 20 or 30 Cavan officials were in the round at that game. So yeah, I'm excited now to get the people back. And NA is leading the way up in the UK, as Sean Kavanagh would say.
Yeah, exactly. The, like, I mean, 500, because the reality is the one team gets 50, the other team gets 50. They're the people in the ground, and 400 go on sale. Now, they're only supposed to be sold locally. I'm sure people from Donegal, Longford, Leitrim and Monaghan will pull a string or two. There won't be many of them there, and they're not supposed to be there, but we know how this will work. But most of them will be from the home team. And you put 300 people into a stand, they will make an atmosphere, Johnny, and they will make a difference.
Yeah, they'll make a lot of noise, and you know, as much noise maybe as if there was 3,000, because like that they're all home and
they haven't roared in about 2 years.
Well, that's the full of they're full of wind to roar. But yeah, it is, and it can, you know, it will make a difference from a point of view of the home team and and having that advantage, and you might get the mirror, you know, clap of the opposition to be a few subs maybe, but that's all, and that could be a daunting enough, you know, a bit like Galatasaray if you were going up to Ballybuffet, be like welcome to hell or something like that. But no, look, it's a sign of things are starting to open, and I'm just hoping that we won't be too far behind down here.
The and I suppose if any of the people from Longford, Leitrim, Monaghan, Donegal go to the game, they won't be able to clap their team on or they'll get ejected, right? Yeah. So they'll have to say not, like I went to a Merseyside derby in Anfield before with an Everton jersey underneath my jacket, and Everton scored. I just couldn't say anything. I just had to keep completely quiet and say nothing. Come here, Pádraig Joyce, lads, has been speaking this week. They obviously rebounded really well against Roscommon, and he was talking about after the Kerry match, and he says, I'm a proud Galway man myself, and I wasn't eating or sleeping well for the first 3 or 4 days of the week. You're hearing criticism all over the place, and rightly so. I got criticised, and at the end of the day I'm the manager of the team, and I'm responsible for how the team plays and how they go out on the pitch. I don't know, Brendan, like, I mean, as a player I've never lost sleep or haven't been able to eat, no matter what loss. Like, I mean, a loss is a loss, and you'd be very disappointed. But I don't know, do managers take losses harder? Because I suppose in the modern game, the spotlight is more on them.
Yeah, I was, as soon as I hear a line like that, it draws me back to them, the gaffer, the buck stocks with me, Staunton line, which always makes me cringe a wee bit. The pride thing too, listen, my fear of lines like that, Willie, is people are still as proud as they are as ever to play, I suppose, in the football teams and represent their county in that. But the pride element in terms of, I suppose, being a galvanising tool, and that is dropped away down. Football now is all about fitness, skills, tactics, you know, preparation. Sure, you can beat the chess just pre-match and that, but really it's about controlled performance more than anything. So the thing about being proud and all that and rallying the troops, you know, there had to be a kick after that Kerry game. If Galway hadn't beat Roscommon, well, my God, just forget about it the rest of the season. And I know Roscommon never have any fear of playing Galway, but surely there was a lift in that dressing room. After this, we'll see what happens. But yeah, Joyce, listen, taking on a county management job, you know, it's about the team around you. You know, Joyce can only use so much. Like, I mean, it's so deep and so vast. I mean, we see Mayo there, like up in numbers of 20 people in the background team and that. And that's where it's gone now. And that's who Park needs around him. But certainly, listen, it's a difficult first position to be in. And certainly the pressure is there, Willie. And Galway, more than any other county, you know, there's that strong football tradition. I mean, look at the abuse Kevin Walsh got as he tried to change Galway's style and bring them into the modern era. I mean, there was some skinning for a man that won 2 All-Irelands. So listen, the knives can come out very quickly in a lot of counties, and Galway's one of them.
Do you think, Johnny, that the pride kind of element has gone out of, you know, the pride of playing for your county? Or not, maybe the pride is obviously still there, but depending on it for a motivational thing, is that going out of it as it gets more professional, or is that still, you know?
Yeah, I think there's still a place in it. I mean, you know, it's funny, I would have always, you know, when Jim McGuinness took over Donegal, and, you know, a lot of the interviews he would have talked about, you know, we're doing this for the people of the hills, and, you know, and it sort of galvanised the county. So I think there's something in it. In Pádraig Joyce's case, you know, it's tough on Pádraig Joyce because Pádraig whether he felt it, it's not himself, he's not saying himself, but the PB, Pádraig Joyce is a golden figure in Galway football, and rightly so. He was a one in a generation type player, and everywhere he went people would talk about the great days that he gave him. Now he's putting himself in a different bracket. You know, when you go into management, you're putting yourself in the spotlight for to be whipped, you know. Yeah. And if things don't go well, and lots of times it's not the manager's fault. You know, you can, you know, we've all been involved in teams at whatever level, and you work on so many things, and then you go out in a game and you think they never even came into existence. You know, so players, you know, maybe revert to type. And I think where he's coming from in that regard is he's hearing that, he's living locally, he's hearing that, he's his own business locally. He's in the construction business, so, you know, it's the topic of
they don't pull any punches. Well,
absolutely.
On the side.
So he's going to hear all this, and from where he's coming from, that can be difficult, because he was always, no matter, even when Galway were lost, Pádraig Joyce was still the main man.
See, that's a good point. That's a good point. And that's a good point, Brendan, that Johnny's making, that he'd never be used to this as a player, criticism, because, like, even if Galway lost, Joyce never, you know, would have been the butt of the criticism. He would have been performing.
Listen, and boy, yes, he's one of the all-time greats. I mean, what a player he was. But I'm just saying, like, go back to Kevin Walsh. You know, not as if Kevin Walsh was a Pádraig Joyce, but he still was an integral part of their double All-Ireland winning team. And it's funny how quickly things can move on. And folks, Johnny, go back to some of that stuff at McGuinness and that. Listen, the winners write history, as we know. I remember playing a club final a few years ago against a few of my friends, and somebody brought in a medal the day before the game, the opposition team, and they beat us. And the story circulated. Couple of years later, we beat them in the final. I was like, where was your man with the medals today? You know, these stories only come out with the teams that actually won.
Yeah.
And that is the issue when people start to romanticise, I suppose, what you're going back to about pride and that, you know.
Yeah, I do agree. I agree with you. And you know, I definitely think the day of kicking the bottles all over the dressing room and beating the table are very much gone. Where I would, and I'd be very much on the outside, and you know, I know, Brendan, you'd know a lot more that was going on in that era, and from Jim McGuinness. But I just thought, when Jim McGuinness spoke, I thought he got the county behind him. I suppose that's my point. And when you're going as a manager, and you know, and exactly, when you win, everything seems great. I remember one stage about a club team down the country, they were pushing the car around the beach on Christmas Day. You know, this sort of stuff. But they won, but they just happened to do that. So, you know, it doesn't mean it's great. But my point being that sometimes the pride, getting the whole county behind you, you know, we're representing the county, you know, you go to maybe looking for a little bit of sponsorship to do something with the team. Listen, we're all Galway men here. We're all Donegal, and we're trying our best. I think there's an advantage in that.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Johnny, I'd agree, but I would think it's part of, you need to create a bit of success in there. I think it's steps, you know. While Donegal started to improve under Jim, then out came the sound bites. And then once they won promotion, won league, started to go on, won the first Ulster, then they captured the imagination, because it had been so long. And then all that, I know what you mean. It works together, but it obviously needs the results in the pitch to be pretty much in tandem with it.
Yeah, I think that's it. I'm wondering how many medals have been produced down through the years in dressing rooms after a loss, and the story's never been heard, never been heard again.
Like, yes.
I do think that, like, I mean, we were talking about this on the hurling show, Johnny, and like the pride in the county is important, and I think some counties lose it a little bit in that. You're tipping away and you're playing inter-county, and you haven't ever asked yourself, who am I representing here? Why am I doing this? You know, and sometimes I remember, like, Cheddar Plunkett, when he took over Laois Hurlers, I think they'd lost their way with that. And he brought them around Laois and he showed them some of the historical points of Laois and, you know, tried to drill into them why they're doing it and that they're Laois men. And there was a huge value I saw in that. And there's a huge value I see in that for a lot of managers. Now, obviously, you have to motivate your players with game plans, and, you know, they have to believe in you. You can't always be like, come on, we're proud Laoisemen. That's going to wear off very quickly. But I do think, for example, the Dublin Hurlers now, their entire backroom team is from Galway. Now, I wouldn't agree with that at all. Yeah. You know, like, maybe call me old fashioned, but I do think definitely some motivation has to be inside you from where you come from.
Well, I suppose, even going back to, and I know everybody is different. Like, you go to the Rock of Dunamass, we'll say, in Laois, and some lads will think you're a gobshite for going there, and other lads will get something out of it. And that's maybe your personality and stuff like that. I know from my point of view, I remember when my dad was playing with Clare over 40s, and Clare over 40s, you know, at the time it was really getting going, and to beat Leash in a final, Bobby Miller was playing with Leash, and it was the old stock, Tommy Carew, Pat May, and there was a big social end of it. Now I was 10 or 11 at the time, and I used to go to all the matches with my dad, and they'd be sitting around talking the woes of Kildare football and all that, and that was always on my mind in certain matches, that what are the boys going, what's Pat Mangan going to be thinking of, and I really got something out of that, that it wasn't just right. Now, maybe that's very romantic or whatever you want, but it was part of what I, you know, felt was important, that, yeah, you know, we did this and it was something bigger than yourself. That'll be lost on some people, and I get that. But from my point of view, and what you say about Cheddar Plunkett, I get that.
Yeah.
You know?
Talking about over 40s, Brendan, Donegal are All-Ireland over 40s champions, and they won it without you. So I don't know how that happened.
I got a call a few weeks back to see what I played this year, and I was like, here, I don't need any more surgery, my man. I'm happy enough in the bouncy castle with the kids.
The trampoline. Very little impact on
yes.
Another one, lads. Derry are flying it, Brendan. I'll start with you. You're very close to Derry. Like, they're on the television against Cavan on Saturday. I'm definitely going to watch this, and we're going to talk about Derry on Monday because I'm interested in them. And I was reading a piece in the Irish News, and they were saying in November 2019, when he just took them over, Derry trained 27 out of 31 days. You know, it was more about a little bit with Pat, like Pat Gilroy, when he took over Dublin, had them training 7 in the morning, not because it makes them fitter, it's to see who's going to drop out or who wants to be there. So I can kind of understand that he was given out about the culture in Derry, people coming in dribs and drabs to matches. They were talking in the article about they were playing a home game against Donegal, and the Derry lads that were injured were up in the stand in their civvies, where Michael Murphy was injured and he was in his full Donegal tracksuit and he was down in the dressing room with the players. Do you know that kind of way, Brendan? And I can clearly remember situations with Leash when I was injured and I wasn't in the dressing room in my gear. I was up in the stand in my jeans. And that's not really the culture that maybe you should be promoting when it's at a very serious top level intercounty.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose, Mullin, that goes back to this whole bigger picture in the GAA about the top teams. As we know, we did go into a Champions League type format in the Super 8s. They are pulling so far ahead and everything's been done right and everybody's got the right attitude and everybody in them counties wants to play. Now, once you start to drop down, the commitment levels that's required to catch up to them is massive. Your players dropping out. The vibe in the county isn't there. Maybe the money isn't there. So this is problem that's going on in the GAA. But Rory Gallagher is commanding, obviously from his time with Donegal and coaching all previous and his own playing days. You know, he's went to Fermanagh. And you can see from that Fermanagh bunch, Willie, they bought into what he wanted. And there's no doubting from what they had to work with. Now, I don't like the tactics he plays. I don't like him with Donegal. But now he's going into Derry and we're like, what's happening? What's the transformation with Derry? I'm like, it's a transformation with Rory Gallagher. That said, Willie, as you said, Derry were training like mad there. But what I'm hearing back all the way through lockdown, you know, everybody was given programmes and they were to the max. I think they've come in very fit to this. And I think, listen, Longford the first day didn't give them any challenge. Fermanagh are a bit of a raw young Fermanagh side there, got taken apart. So I would caution now just with how fit they are. They're still playing blanket defence, but when they break, they maybe are at that wee bit of fitness. Now, the players have bulked up, no doubt. They're in serious shape. And I think that's maybe adding in to that. I don't think you'll see the real Derry until they meet either Donegal or Down and also Championship, and that'll tell the tale where this team's at.
Yeah, maybe. One thing I remember, Johnny, was when McGeaney took over Kildare. I remember ye hammered Leash in Tullamore. And I remember I was walking down from the ground. I wasn't on the panel. I think I was with Parnellis that year. And the walking down from the pitch, and not only, you know, the kind of big culture at the time used to be everybody walking off the pitch together in a big group. Not only were you doing that in off a group off the field, you all walked down to town in a big group, whereas right. The Leash players would come up, there'd be one lad with the hand over the back, and you were immaculately togged out in white t-shirts, you know, the Kildare tracksuit, the Kildare bag. And I just remember looking at it going, they look like professionals and our lads look like amateurs.
Yeah, and
there's a perception. There is confidence from stuff like that.
There is a perception, and I suppose you're trying to create the culture. This culture is you know, it's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, but it was probably always there. And it came from the top. You know, the management, the manager decides what's important. Like Kieran was a big advocate of, you know, if we went away the night before a match or we were staying away, you know, for any period, nobody drank. None of the back. The physio didn't have a drink the night before a match. You know, the doctor, the kit man, nobody had. We're all in this together. And, you know, I suppose that builds a certain, you know, a standard within the... And everyone was accountable. And that's the other thing. You know, you were always accountable and you did it. We did it right. Whether the results went with or we believed and this was the right thing to do. And that's why it was done. And lots of times we walked down. It was lovely walking down that evening, a lovely sunny evening. I remember it well after winning. But, you know, we walked down with Navan the same in 2010 as well after Loud beating us. And it was a walk of shame nearly. But we did it because it was we felt it was the right thing to do and we were together. And you're trying to create that culture and you know, I think that is important. And I think, you know, when we look at Rory Gallagher doing that, he believes in that. He thinks it's important. And I think you should be doing it for the right reasons. And it can, it is perception. And
they're
also,
just small things. Like, but, we're not but, saying these are game
no,
changers.
But you also have to, that stood out for you.
Yeah.
How many young Kildare kids or a 14-year-old that's maybe thinking, I'm not too, you know, for,
yeah.
I want to be part of that. And so it builds the bigger picture as well. And I think that's important, you know,
yeah, no,
that you want
point.
To play with Kildare, yeah. You want to play with Leash.
I think why too. I mean, if you look at the spine of Gallagher's team there, you know, you've Rogers, Chrissy McCaig, you know, you have obviously Glasses back there from midfield from the States, McFall. McFall's as good as footballer as you get in the country. Hey, McGuigan up front. And what he's done there, Slotneil and Glenn, go back to club football. Well, for years, Derry club football was way ahead of Donegal's. Donegal's is catching up bit by bit, but I'd still say if you put five top Derry teams against five Donegal, I'd still put my money in the Derry teams. So the clubs are there, but the clubs are so strong that they've upset the balance. So this is where Rory's trying to go back in, trying to re-establish the county as number one. Well, with seeing Donegal, listen, county's way ahead. You know, that's number one. Everybody wants to play for Donegal. And Derry, your club comes first. And this is the things that Rory's trying to tease out and get right. But hey, see, in terms of something to work with, you know, no offence to Fermanagh before, the amount of talent in Derry is unbelievable. Because Slotneil and Glen, well, they're as good as two club teams as you get in the country. And there was, I think there was eight or nine players of those involved in the last couple of games. And that's huge for Derry.
Yeah, no, we'll mention a little bit about Derry. Chrissy McCaig's back in on the full back line. He's in corner back as a man marker now, which is an interesting one. Tony McEntee had a piece with Conan Doherty, our own ex-Conan Doherty here from this show, who we know well in The Independent. And he was talking to Tony McEntee. Tony McEntee's a bit of a straight talker, right? So he's talking about telling fellas that they didn't make the match day squad. You know, so he says, if you're ringing me, this is Tony McEntee talking now. He says, if you're ringing me about why you're not on the panel, please understand that it's either because of injury or application, attitude or ability. So he says, if you're not making the panel, ask yourself the question. I think that sort of stuff helps with clarity and saves people from wasting time. And it's certainly not certainly may not be the best way to manage everybody, but at least they're not expecting to be called by someone to make up lies to them every week. Now, that's fair enough. Nothing worse than being bullshitted by a manager when you ring them up or whatever. But I'd still, if he said that to me because of injury, application, attitude or ability, Johnny, I'd say, which one? I don't think it's that clear at all.
You'd be in trouble if he said them all. You're in serious bother. Yeah, look, I suppose, you know, delivering that message to a player, a lot of the time they probably know what's coming. There might be one or two maybe on the edge, but most of them will know the phone call is coming or the message is coming. And it's the tough part of management. But I always felt, you know, listening to Tony Magnan, as you say, he was a straight talker. And, you know, you could nearly picture him, you know, having four signs and he's going to put up one. It's application today. Go back to training and we'll see, you know, Tuesday night. And look, let's be honest about it. You know, when you break all this down as a player, and whether this may be very black and white, which I tend to be on lots of issues, your job as a player is to convince the manager he should pick you. And that's it. And if he doesn't, like in the vast majority of counties, and I won't say them all, but maybe, you know, maybe it's different in the top teams. But in Kildare, you could be the complete and utter waster. But if you're good enough and you're producing the thing, he's going to pick you. That's it. He mightn't like you, but if you're producing the goods. And that's basically what it is for me. You've got to go, all right, there's times you might feel I'm letting get in a little bit, but you have to put up your hand. You have to put up your hand and say, pick me. And that might be coming from a point of view of you have to put in extra effort. There might be a little bit of letting them see that, you know, they're looking at will we pick Colin Parkinson or pick John Doyle for this? Well, Woolley's here before training every night, and he's making an effort to be here and trying. You know, he's doing a bit extra, and we see him doing a bit extra. Now, I might be doing as much on my own, but I'm putting my hand up. I'm getting them to talk to a positive thing about me, and that's what it was for me. You know, if you're there, a lot of the time, if you're not producing the goods, what can I do?
Yeah, I remember when I went back onto the Leash panel in 2011. I'd pulled out for 2 years when I was in Parnells, and I went back and I trained like mad, and I got in great shape under Justin McNulty. I was doing flat out on the weights. I was in the top one or two, three on some of the bench presses and the strength tests, and this was great. And then played the first league game. I wasn't on it. Three subs were brought on. I wasn't one of the three. Second game the same. Second game the same. So I thought it was fair enough for me to give McNulty a ring at this stage and say, here, what's going on here? I said, I prefer if you were straight up with me, because if I can't get in the top six and I can't get in the next three, if I'm number 10 at best forward, I said, I'm wasting my time here, Justin, because I don't want to come back just to be on a bench all year. I want to see some game time. I'm not asking you to start me, but if I don't see any game time, like, I don't see the point. He didn't speak to me like a human being. He spoke to me a bit like a robot. You're on the panel like everybody else, and you won't be pushed. You know, I don't know. He was just being very robotic and saying, you're no different to anybody else. You're not in the starting team, and you weren't brought on the last day, and, you know, and all this. And I was like, Jesus. And I was speaking to a selector actually recently, and he actually told me that McNulty had told him in a meeting, we kind of know what Woolley can do or whatever. If he had said that to me, I would have said, I would have accepted that. Yeah. Bide your time. He gave me nothing, and I ended up dropping off the panel. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I mean, I see this with Tony McEntee, Brendan. Like, I mean, I always think that the good managers are able to speak to players like a human being, like their personality allows them to explain things. And it's not about, am I a good manager here? What kind of friend would I be breaking this news, you know? Or can I explain this to this fella? I don't know. Am I being a big softy here, Brendan, or something?
No. Well, listen. We're all there's different styles of people. Well, you might have been better in the hipster 60s or something. I can pitch you in a day, but. Listen, I couldn't see McNulty in there, but no, listen, robotic you were talking about there. Don't talk to me about robotic Armagh. We come up against that roboticness in the Ulster Championship, unfortunately, so many times. But yeah, I think on the list of four things there, Willie, you might have come down at ability there was the reason we had this situation. Sorry, that's a bit harsh, my man. I'll throw that out there. But no, that thing of, Willie, of knowing where you stand, right? If you're putting your whole life into something, right, and like you're saying then, you're left dumbfounded. And I've heard this so many times. It's as if managers are head-wrecking agents. And I've heard this recently with an underage manager there, you know, just throwing out nonsense to a young boy, but why he's not making a panel or what's this and what's that. You really feel like ringing him up going like, you know, there's an easier way to do this. And as you said, to keep you tuned in, to keep you going, why doesn't he say, listen, I'm going to put you on the next couple of games. That's what the bloody league's for. And then it's up to you to make or break it. Instead of you wondering, here, I'm getting up at 6 o'clock to go to the gym before I go to work. So this scenario, yeah, but different managers, and I suppose that's what separates the good from the bad, Willie. And again, going back to the thing about all the players wanting to play for counties, and going back to even as Johnny's saying about Jim, them boys would have put their neck in the line, their body in the line for Jim. And that's the difference. That's what you need from your best managers.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because if he'd even given me 2 minutes against the next game, I would have stayed. I was just like, geez, he's given me nothing on the phone. He's given me no carrot here. He's given me no information. And now the next game is the exact same. I'm like, I saw it.
Did you not have a similar kid as you, Mick? Is this kind of a recurring theme?
It could be, Brendan. Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, you know right well the answer to that question. So, like, I mean,
there's a common denominator here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Come here, just one quick one before we go, Liz. I don't really need you to comment on this, because I'd say we're all going to be on the same wavelength here, and that's John Kennellan. He's doing an awful lot of work, and he's reached out to all GAA clubs across the country, and he has explained to them he's trying to bring a motion to Congress, and it's regarding the Dublin's funding, and that they're getting disproportionate funding, and we all know that they're getting too much, and he wants it equalised. And what he wants is for clubs to discuss it and bring a motion to their county convention with an aim of, when this motion goes to Congress, that it gets debated at Congress. And there's been GAA clubs across across 20 different counties, and they've confirmed that they will table a motion at their annual general meetings, and hopefully bringing this to their county convention to equalise the funding that Dublin get. I think everybody outside of Dublin will agree with this. I think if people, GAA people, real true GAA people in Dublin look at this and say, that looks fair to me. I'll read out the motion. I've read this motion out on the show before. All coaching and development funding must be allocated to individual counties on an equal basis, based on registered GAA members in the preceding year in each county, up to a maximum variance of 5%. Any proposal to allocate coaching and development funding in excess of 5% variance must be brought to annual Congress every 2 years for approval, with a transparent plan and business case for each increased funding. I don't know, Johnny, like I said, you know, I can imagine the three of us are just going to agree here on that. Do you want to say anything on it?
No, I think, look, it is, you know, when you see the facts and figures on paper, you know, it's certainly the balance isn't there. And you know, lots of ways you'd have to take your hat off to John Kinnellan. Like, he's very passionate about this. He's an ex-player. He's obviously, you know, like we all sit around and we talk about what should be done, but he's actually gone above and beyond and said, look, I feel passionate about this and I'm going to do a lot of work. And he's done a colossal amount of work. Now, it won't sit well in certain quarters, as you know, as most debates and things like that do. So, you know, you'd say fair play to him. And look at the GAA, we're always told by the GAA is about the clubs, and it's about the, you know, we're all members and we all have a say. So, you know, he's putting a very a sort of a motion towards Congress, and you know, it's people to step up and if they're passionate and believe that it's the right thing to do, which I think, you know, it probably is time for change.
Yeah, it's 98% of the clubs that were reached out to that responded have been in favour of this, and that's, what is it, fairness, I suppose. So it's anything to say on this, Brendan?
Yeah, well, listen, we're on about 1.4 million here, and the Dubs, it's not going to stop their ability to do what they're doing, and I'm not blaming them for it. Well, it's one of those debates where we have to have it, and I hate having it because it separates everybody in the GAA. And you made a good point there. Well, if you're a true GAA person, you know that something has to change. And the problem is that a lot of people aren't on that side, and that's their point of view. They just want the best from Dublin, but the massive animal that Dublin are is just overbearing everything now in the GAA, Willie. So something has to give, you know. Dublin clubs, I mean, look at Cooler's sponsorship with Biotech, and that's a Dublin club on there. Like, Dublin's ability at club and county level now has gone massive, and I know Bernard Brogan tweeted there, you know, what was it, once in a generation. The Dublin panel, well, the age range of it has remained consistent throughout this, the panel age range. So it's not that it's the same team. And if you look at the brilliant teams from the past, the Kerry teams, the Dublin teams that won multiple titles in a row, there was a cycle there. There's no cycle at the minute. So this is very dangerous. So it's down to us as GAA people. Are we happy that certain teams, particularly Dublin, are pulling away from everybody else? Are the Dubs happy with that? Because until that's addressed, well, things is just going to keep getting worse. And there'll never be a level playing field. I get that. But as much as we have to try and make it that, but it is such a difficult one to encounter. But it's certainly not working at the moment. Well, and if you look at, particularly in Leinster, it's really harming all the other counties. So, you know, there's only one option here, Willie. We know what it is. That's the split.
Split Dublin. Because, like, I mean, the reality is, just to finish up on this point, well, I would be in favour of that, but this will make zero difference, as Brendan says. This is a not a significant amount of money, and it's enough. Dublin are banking this money anyways, so it's not going to make much difference. I don't know why Dublin supporters wouldn't be in favour of this, make it fairer, because it's been used as a stick to beat Dublin with, that they're getting disproportionate money. And, like, I mean, it takes away from what they achieve on the field. My argument with that money, the damage has been done now. So every other county needs double the money Dublin are getting just to catch up from where, you know, where they were. So, like, I don't know, lads, we're in the middle of the league. This feels like a bit of a closed season conversation. So we'll move off it and we'll come back, because we have
on, it's
very important. We have permutations to talk about here, lads. Right, we'll come back in part two. Okay, lads, we'll start with Division 1 and the North section. It's probably the most exciting section. Donegal have 3 points, Tyrone and Armagh have 2, Monaghan have 1. All four of them can make the semi-final depending on how it turns out. A win or a draw, and Donegal will be through. We know that Tyrone and Armagh, whoever wins that will go through. Monaghan have to win and hope Armagh lose to try and get in the mix on 3 points. So Donegal are away to Armagh, Brendan. Like, we've talked about Donegal a lot on the show so far. What's the talk up in Donegal? I know everybody's not exactly out around the pubs and everything talking, and, you know, what's the word in Donegal, but you're out and about. Like, I mean, there must be huge excitement, or are people almost so brainwashed by defensive football that they're saying, this is outrageous, we're way too wide open?
Well, I couldn't get my breath at that game the last night, because normally games hinge on a goal scored or a goal missed is usually a big part of the game.
Yeah,
there was maybe 16 clear goal chances and it was mad. And actually, like Sean Kavanagh was saying, just I heard somebody tell me back that he played in Balbuffet, I think 11 times, and he had 2 goal chances in the whole 11 games, and he was full forward for quite a part of them. You know, what is happening? And I'll tell you what's really fascinating about these opening rounds of the game, and the way, if you look at the scoring average, Willie, this last, say, 6 years in the league from its worst point of blanket defence, it is just up. The graph has just gone up, up and up, and this year it's taken another huge jump again. And what's happened is, in blanket defence, one-on-one defending, as we know, has gone down and down, but we haven't noticed it because there's so many players in and around it.
Yeah.
Now as the game opens up, it's almost like the arms race. So now the forwards have reached a level that I've never seen before, in terms of, because they've so little space to work in. They've had to get better and better in the blanket. The defenders now haven't been man markers and have gone away, basically. We're not unearthing man markers anymore. Now as the game opens up, forwards are just completely running amok. And you think back in the day, and Johnny will tell you there, the amount of top defenders, you know, you think of your Lockhart, your Darren Fays, Connor Gormley's, all these players, Paddy Christie. If you beat them one-on-one, you were doing well. Now, Willie, if you see any one-on-one scenario in GA, you know, you're like, how did that happen? Well, that wasn't fair. He's left exposed. Can you imagine those great cornerbacks and fullbacks back in the day saying, here, that's my job? But I mean, from Donegal's perspective, we had 3 players round Conor McCarthy twice. 3 players round him. And Conor McCarthy still, now, brilliantly taking goals, don't get me wrong, as good as hat-tricks as I've seen. But our defending was absolutely shambolic. And after the match, I spoke to Declan Bonner, and I actually liked Declan's attitude towards it, because a bit like Paul Joyce not sleeping, Bonner kind of laughed it off. And I was really glad that, Wally, because we're just back. There's very little time to get everybody up to speed. It was an unbelievable game. Why get bogged down in this thing about, oh, our defending was terrible? You know, he was kind of like, well, that was mental. You know, we still hit 120. Donegal came back from the dead, 9 points down in the first half. They were 6 down halfway through the second half. They still got a draw of it, which they shouldn't have got by right. So I like this attitude towards the bully, because, you know, if you're getting caught up in that, it is a job. It's not a paid job. It's something that you're doing for the love of it. So you've got to take all experiences on board. But certainly, Donegal defend again, Willie. There'll be no Ulster and no Tilted in All-Ireland, and they know that. But there's players to come back and at least will be entertaining, I'll tell you that much.
That's a good point Brendan makes, in that forwards have evolved to make the most of small spaces, Johnny, because they've had to. And like, it's like true over the last 7 or 8 years. So they've improved, and cornerbacks have maybe gotten into a situation where their strength in numbers and their one-on-ones have disimproved. So like, maybe, you know, I didn't really think of it like that.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. And you know, like I often said, you know, in the last number of years, I wouldn't like to be playing in a corner forward now, because if you get it, you're nearly just, you know, you could win it inside the 14, and before you know it, it's back inside your own half, because it's hold possession, don't take pot shots. So it is a difficult, and I suppose, if, as Brendan says, if you're used to that environment, it's there in training, and all of a sudden then you feel like you have a little bit more space, you know, you're in a really good position. And I think from a point of view of forward, like, most forwards now are so comfortable off both feet, you know. You're closed down right, spin, you're turning, the next thing, bang, over the bar, over in the left-hand side with the left foot. You know, it's, I just think that they've been used to that, and they seem to be able to bring it to a new level. And, you know, it's, for most spectators, which we all are, it's just great to see. It's so refreshing. And sometimes I wonder, is it after the COVID that, you know, the way it's gone so, everyone wants to attack, you know, and is it a case that we've been locked up for so long, it's just get mad and get out there and play. Now, football will always evolve. in every dressing room this week, they look at their defence and what can they do better. They look at their attack. Like, I'm sure, you know, Kerry will have spent a few sleepless nights and we shipped four goals against Dublin. You know, we kicked some brilliant scores, but we need to work really hard at that. And you know, so it will always evolve. But it's making for great viewing.
No, it definitely. Another thing, catch 22, Brendan. I think Donegal and any team is finding themselves in. Like McInnesby and Carol O'Connell did fierce damage against them. Now, you know, you have Kieran Thompson and Michael Langan playing wing forward. There's obviously a huge advantage of having those players wing forward in that they're attacking players, but they might not want to work. Now, here's the problem with this. If you put two working half forwards on these lads, yes, you'll stop them attacking, but when you attack, you know, McInnesby and Carol O'Connell might drop off them into sweeping positions, so your attacking game is kind of messed up. We saw that with Armagh the other night in Tyrone, where O'Hanlon dropped off Conor Myler because he's no threat to him. And I was talking on Monday's show about doing that regularly at wing back. If your man's no threat and he goes away, you'll help out the other six lads. Whereas if you want a kicking game like Donegal do, that half forward line has to be engaging that half back line. They have to be worried about them either from a scoring point of view or a playmaking point of view. So they have to push up and mark them. You know, like, I mean, so where do you get to the point in the half forward line of that Donegal half forward line where you're able to tick both boxes? You're able to have them working hard enough that, you know, we know wing backs in the game now, they're all, you have, like, I mean, Mogan, McHugh, O'Connell, McInnesby, you have McLaughlin for Mayo, you have Durkin, you have White and Murphy for Kerry. Like, they're all bombing. This is a new part of the game now. So what do you do as a wing forward? Do you almost go out and how do you find a wing forward, I suppose the question is, that will engage the wing back to mark them from a scoring or creative point of view, but also has the work rate to be able to do the other side of it, which traditionally scoring and creative wing forwards don't want to do?
That's an interesting point of view. The great thing is that it is evolving and opening up. And if you look at the transition now from defence to attack, everyone's realised now that hand passing it over and back just invites a stalemate.
Yeah.
So they know kick passing up the pitch has released everything. Players now are finally looking up and kick passing. But you're right, that half forward role is such a difficult role. I don't think work rate is the issue necessarily for Donegal. I think it was just tackling and not putting a proper tackle. And you know, when you stand a man up, those good cornerbacks and fullbacks that I mentioned, whenever you went at them, they would hit you. You know, our own Neil McGee in his pump would have been, he'd hit you solidly, knocked you back, making you recycle the ball. And I think therein lies the key. But you're right, if you look at Donegal, you know, in the last few years since Declan Bonner's come on, Niall O'Donnell, as you said, Langan, Oisín Gallan, Jamie Brennan, Mogan, all these lads, Kieran Thompson, coming through to be top players. Now look at the other end of the pitch, Willie. You think back to 2012, Donegal started with Neil McGee, cornerback, and Paddy McGrath, Neil McGee, fullback, Paddy McGrath, cornerback. They could be in our full back line this year. And that was 2012, and they weren't. That wasn't their first year. So when you think about the explosion of talent, again, is all coming through forwards, and that actually comes back into Donegal club football. You look at what's happened in the county football in terms of defenders going down. And our club football is so negative that now that has stopped producing players for Declan. And then the knock-on effect of our own negative football now is really hampering our county team. Because see, if we had two or three good players coming through now, don't get me wrong, Gillespie would have been one of those, hampered with injuries. So was young Morrison from Unions. I think they were two potential players and have just been hampered by injury. But Molly, you shouldn't be clinging on to a couple of players. There should be six or seven defensive players like those lads. That's the balance would always be. But because of Donegal club football now, Donegal could, if they had two or three extra defenders, and I think could really make a tilt at All-Ireland. As it stands now, Willie, they've got the firepower. It's at the other end of the pitch, as we've seen from the Ulster final last year. If a team really goes at them, they just don't really have maybe the combative abilities of some of the top teams and certainly the likes of the Dubs.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one to look at, Johnny. In my head, Stephen O'Brien is the prototype modern wing forward, that he can score, but he works like a, you know, like a dog as well. And, you know, someone like Paul Mannion has such an appetite for work, and he's also a threat. You know, these lads, I do think Kieran Thompson and Michael Langan especially, might be a little bit lazy on the old, you know, Padder Mogan, or, you know, if he's marking Padder Mogan in training, he's gone. Well, I might score a goal if he goes, you know, yeah. Let him off. I think he can let corner backs off the odd time, but you can't let Mogan or these wing backs off.
No, particularly in the modern game, because they're such athletes now. Like, they're just gone, and you end up tracking them. Like, I know when I played wing forward, Woolly, you know, and you were marking that, and you looked the bomb. you were sort of thinking, okay, I can spend a day running after this guy, or I can try, you know, have him look, try to look after me. Yeah. And you'd cheat a bit, because once you, and I fell into the trap more times where I ended up trying to mark him, and I'm thinking, well, I'm the forward here.
Yeah.
So there's times you would cheat and say, listen, I'm going to let him off. I'm going to maybe talk to Emmett Bolton. You pick him, he's coming. And when that ball breaks down, I want to deliver the far side of the field. And all of a sudden, then you might get on the end of a score and they're saying, who's marking him? You mark him.
It's a game of cat and mouse. I played it for years, yeah. Johnny, in both roles, wing back and wing
absolutely.
Forward.
Absolutely. You know, and the day, from a forward point of view, you're heading back all the time, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's getting that, and maybe, you know, is being brave enough. But I think at the moment as well, and just looking at the, obviously looking at a good bit of Division 2 where Kildare are, and then the top teams, and, you know, for me, the big thing in the forward formation is the pace at which they attack. Now, that's one aspect, but the other aspect of it is the slickness through the hands, and the ball at the very least goes dead. You know, there's no sloppy hand pass, there's no kick pass given away. I looked at a few times Kildare, they brought the ball forward, not at pace, got loads of clear ball. We'll probably talk about it a little bit, you know, when we talk about Division 2. And then, you know, we had the ball, and then a sloppy hand pass, and they killed us on the counter-attack. You don't see that as much in the top teams, you know, at the attacking end of the field.
Yeah.
You know, that, and there's runners, there's options coming, diagonal runs, if there's one lad is coming, and he's not coming, you know yourself, Willie, if you're marking a forward, and he's not really looking for it, he's half, but if he puts the boot down and goes, you have to go with him, you know, and I think the top teams are really good at that.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that's the thing. We'll have a look at Division 1 South here now, lads. Kerry and Dublin are on 3 points. They're ahead of Galway on 2. Roscommon have none. So Roscommon are pretty much gone. Kerry are pretty much through because of their goal difference or their score difference after hammering Galway. But the winner of Galway and Dublin will join them. Galway are at home. Amazingly, if Galway were to win at home, you know, they're through after such a humiliation. And they did improve an awful lot the last day. Although I don't know, Brendan. I think Galway have slightly slipped off the top teams, like without Ian Burke, without Michael Daly, John Daly, Thomas Flynn, even Garrett Bradshaw, who retired, is an option for centre back. Like the form of Johnny Heaney and Brannigan, Eamon Brannigan, like they were Kevin Walsh's two of his best soldiers, those two fellas, and they don't seem to be playing very well. At least he did play Walsh inside and Comer at 11 the last day, which was something. And Porrick Joyce spoke afterwards about the work rate being really good, which was the very obvious issue for them. I don't know about you, like, I mean, I don't want to draw too many conclusions after just two league games. I'm just looking down through their team. I don't see it at the level of the top teams.
Yeah, you're right. Well, Galway seemed like they were coming a couple of seasons there, and just going back to Walsh and the trouble of putting in a defensive structure in place, you know, that certainly didn't look in place, obviously, against Kerry. You know, it was man for man, and Kerry ran amok. And you're right, we can't read too much in that. Kerry were obviously hurting the whole season about their defeat to Cork. They were supposed to have a tilt at All-Ireland. They didn't even get into the Munster final. A bit like Donegal the first day out, they came out with a real sense of purpose against Tyrone, which I didn't see the last day. So, you know, I'm just wondering about those two teams were really at maybe a point to prove, and Galway just weren't ready for that. But you're right, looking down the line at Galway, you know, you're thinking stabilising Division 1 and going into Connacht, is if they won a Connacht title, they're certainly not in a position they have at the All-Ireland. And you're right, those players that are missing in there are impossible to replace. So I think it's going to be a difficult season for them. But certainly, Roscommon is the team, I think, Willie, drew the short straw there of all the teams in Ireland. And when the leagues were divided up, Roscommon probably thought they could have a go at Galway. As I said previously, Galway were going to come out with a bit of bit between the teeth. But certainly would have thought they could have a go at a few of the Ulster teams there and maybe pick up some points. But the fact that they were lumped in with Kerry and Dublin is very difficult for them on their return to Division 1.
Yeah, definitely. And they're playing Paul Kelly as a wing forward, who's a working wing forward. And this is a new bugbear of mine, Johnny, because if you're going all or nothing at this. So if you want to have a kicking game, and I was talking about this in the Tyrone perspective on Monday's show with Myler and McGeary, you're giving the opposition a handy sweeper. So if your tactics is kicking and you have a good full forward line and that's the game you want to play, why are you not trying to engage the half back line? Why are you giving them the handy sweeper? Because they won't follow Kelly. They say, right, work away. You're not going to trouble the scoreboard. I'll let you on working away. I'm just going to sit back in here, or I'm going to pick up the centre backs man, and he's going to sit in there. And now you have a, now your kicking game's gone. Do you get me? Do you have to think these things through now that the game is starting to change? You have to think about your one-on-ones in your full back line. You have to think about your kicking game. You have to think about, what kind of a half-forward line have I? Have I a creative half-forward line? Are we working through that? Who are my kick passers on the half-back line? Or am I on the half-forward line? Who are my kick passers in midfield? If I have two fetchers in midfield that can't kick pass, are they any good to me? Do I have to put a big man, small man combination? All kind of stuff we would have talked about when we were playing, these are coming back into the game now, Johnny. It's a whole new world.
And we're going to blame the COVID for it all on it. Look, I think, you know, and we talk, you know, we talked here last week or the week before about Tyrone's, this kicking game, you know, and it's probably alien to them from, you know, the Mickey Hart era where it was run the ball. But like any game, you've got to be able to vary the game. You know, like, what's the ideal? The keeper kicks it out, we catch it in the midfield, he kicks it to the full forward, we kick it up. That's the ideal. But there's so many, there's hundreds of permutations are going on. So, like you say, if we're going to play our kicking game, the opposition are going to say, look it, we've looked at this. When the centre-back gets it, he's going to look to kick it. You know, so we're identifying where they're strong. Now, the opposition have to be able to adapt that. So I think that's always been in the game, and you've always going to have to. And it's known that you're changing the mindset of, look, ideally when that ball is on, we need to kick it. It doesn't mean you've got to make a decision then. It is very basic.
Yeah.
You know, if, make a decision, if I look up and there's a sweeper there, then I don't kick. You know, where, but my first option is to kick it. Where maybe Tyrone, if we're going to talk about Tyrone and that, their option was to safety number one, regardless of whether the kick was on. And you become programmed to that. You're nearly, if you give away a ball, you're going to be nailed for it in the stats and or in the video analysis. Where now, they have a little bit more freedom of expression that if it is on, you give it, you do the right thing, it mightn't work out. So you've got to get all that aspects of it. And I think that's always happening within teams.
Yeah, no, it is. It definitely. But I do think there's way more tactical aspects, like almost I call them old school tactical aspects that are coming back into the game now, which is absolutely brilliant. Division 2 North, that's all settled. Meath and Mayo are through to the semi-final, and Down and Westmeath are in a relegation match, so we don't need to talk too much about that. Division 2 South is where it's all kicking off, Johnny. Looks like Laois are in the like mathematically Laois can get into the semis, but Laois have to hammer Kildare and Clare have to hammer Cork, and that won't happen. The winner of Kildare and Cork will probably go through with Clare, you'd imagine, although maybe Clare could get caught potentially on scoring difference. It's definitely an exciting division. Kildare play Laois in a Moore Park. I don't know, Johnny, Kildare just, I'm not a Kildare fan. I think you like, I'm not from Kildare.
I played against you.
I would have had plenty, but I have a bit since. Do you know what it was? It's seeing a team challenge Dublin gave me a bit of a grow for Kildare, because it was the 2018 Leinster final. It was 17 or 18, 18, and they rattled it. They played very well against Dublin, and I started liking Kildare then because they were a realistic challenger against Dublin, and I've kind of stuck to rating them, liking them. And it goes against everything I stand for to be liking Kildare, but at the same time, like, they frustrate the life out of me. And I was mentioned on Monday, or maybe the last time you were in, Johnny, like Kieran McKeever and his attitude to Kildare, a bit like that they're soft. And then you look at a result like this after a great result against Cork, and I'm starting to think they are a bit soft. It's a mentality thing. It's a softness thing. They're not picking enough combative players. The Fergal Conways that'll get stuck in, he's coming on as a sub. They're too nice. And is that fair enough? Like, and against a good, hard team like Clare, who are as honest as the day is long, and they're the opposite of that. They're not fancy. They're not soft in any way. Kildare lose at home to them.
Yeah, well, yeah, look, there's lots of things. I suppose, you know, to hear that Kildare are soft, it was something that was thrown at us when Kieran McGeaney came into the, he says, what do you think the outside world think of you? And it wasn't nice to hear, you know, because again, back to my original point, and when we talked about, you know, maybe the, you know, where you come from, and the pre-Mico thing was always Kildare had no bottle, you know, back in the 80s, when I would have started to look at the 80s, early 90s, Mico came, and the one thing we got rid of, and the Glenn Ryans and Willie McCreary's and Rainbows, they got rid of all that. Well, at least we were going to fight. Tooth and nail. We mightn't win, but we're going to go out and be the best we could be. And then when McGeaney said it and said that, well, you're just a bit soft. It was, you know, it hit me right between the two eyes, and I didn't like it. And I felt, while the stats are there to say we won feck all with Kieran, we competed and people didn't call us soft. And that was a win that, for me personally, we got back to that level. So I suppose making your point now, going back to this,
have they fallen
soft,
into that again?
I think we have. And I don't think it's not a cowardice thing by any stretch, because there is, you know, you go toe to toe with a lot of those players and you'd be second, you know, so it's not a cowardice thing by any stretch of the mind. But it's an willingness to play with at a high tempo. It's willingness to maybe, you know, break the gain line.
Is that attitude then?
I think it's maybe a little bit of, I don't know whether it's reflective of club football in the county. You know, sometimes I think maybe, is it
Moorfield
referees?
Wouldn't be soft in any way.
No,
no,
I wonder, is it you know, like you hear of northern counties where, you know, I remember going to, I was up in Hollis and Donegal, I went out to see Glenty's play. I'm not even sure they're playing. But by God, you weren't getting handy freeze. So that was your environment. And I'm not saying, sometimes maybe that was the case. And there'll be people, I'm sure there's club players around saying, Jesus, Johnny Dyle talking about handy freeze, he got them all his life. You know, because they often tell me when I'm playing. But I mean, I think the big thing for Kildare is the inconsistency. And it was there when I was there, Woolly, in regard to the day we thought, you know, it's going to be tough, but we should be all right, is the day we came home with our tails between our legs. I was looking, and I always look for it. Great win against Cork. All right, if you go back and it looked like a mindset set in last, this game is won. You know, Cork come in and finish with the last 5 points. You know, them 5 points could come back and haunt us yet. You know, instead of, we have them by the throat, let's squeeze. I go in then and I look at, and I was looking around, thought the warm up was a little bit. You know, I looked at some of the players in the stand that you talked about. They were in their civvies.
Right.
Do you know? Yeah. So, and maybe this is just me. You know, I looked at for one example, and I don't mean to make up players, but I'm going to name Mick O'Grady, who's fullback, who's had a great game. And he's a tough player because I played on him. He's a really good player. He's fullback. And it could be just a mindset, or it could be just me. But a ball went out towards the scoreboard end. He was 2 yards ahead of his man, Keelan Sexton. Went to go down it. Got a bit of a dunt. 9 times out of 10, you get a free. In my book, it was a free. Going down, he came from behind. Ref didn't give it. Split second, Mick, the two hands went out. Where's me free? Ended up thinking, then the ball was there. Keelan Sexton got it. He fouled him. And David Tovey put in the ground, kicked over the bar. And I was thinking, geez, you know, get your ball, win it, burst out. You know, was that a mindset thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And that sort of worries me about Kildare. They're good footballers, don't get me wrong, but you have to play at intensity. You have to go and you know, play this game. So we, as a county, we have to fight every day. You played with Portlaoise. I'm sure there's days you went out playing Ballylina or playing, we should be all right here. They might give you a scare, but your tradition of winning, your mentality of winning probably got you over the line. We don't have that in Kildare. So we have to fight every battle, every day at 100 mile an hour. And, you know, like I do talk to supporters and they'd be saying, we should beat Clare. Why? Why should we beat Clare?
Yeah.
You know, we have this
You're
little
not
bit
at that
of,
level,
no, we're
yeah.
not at that
yeah.
level. So we have to go and beat Clare. And that sort of is a worrying thing for me. And some of that's outside the player's control. But you have to fight and you have to win every battle, every day. Just because you won it last week, Johnny, is not enough.
Johnny, do you not think there's certain teams out there that are bloody plucky and they can put it up to you on any day, no matter where they're at? And I would put Clare in that.
Yeah.
And put Tip in that as well. But teams that on a given day are going to give it to you, and you're right about there's certain sides you play, and there's going to be a, how would you say, I think softness is a bit of a fucking insult to throw at teams a lot of the time, but they don't have maybe that bit of meat to come at you. I mean, Fermanagh would have been like that in Ulster. I even remember years ago when I started playing first, even Leitrim used to be a team, they would put it up to you, you know, and maybe us. Division 1, then B3, and you play them. I know they mixed up the leagues a few times. Certain teams will give it to you, and Clare is one of them.
But I think the reason they do, you know, it's because they have to do it every single day. There's no day Leitrim go out.
Yeah.
They're always underdogs. They're always being told, you know, you're not good enough. Clare, in my book, and it's an insult, and there'll be people in Clare would say, who does he think he is? But Clare's a hurling county. you know, and hurling is the number one sport in that county, as far as I'm concerned. But so Clare are used to that. There's people in Kerry saying that. There's people, so they have to fight tooth and nail every time they go out. So that's their environment in which to play the game. And I think, you know, and as I said, there's some teams that they don't have to do that because they have the tradition. And the tradition of winning, being used to winning, will get them over tight battles. Where I think Kildare have to battle every day because we're Kildare at that level.
Yeah, but Kildare have notions above that level, you see. Well, and I suppose like they make the super eights, they perform well in Dublin. It's almost like they've been living off that then, and they almost think maybe they can go into a game against Clare and you know, get through the game or whatever. You won't against Clare, and that's the reality.
No, it's a battle every time.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they're not prepared for battle. I don't know. It's just very disappointing that they're not pushing on. That's kind of the point I make. And for a Leinster Championship, you know, for everything, that they're better than that they are now. And I don't know, they needed to look at themselves in the mirror. But then again, last year they needed to look themselves in the mirror. So when are they going to look at themselves in the mirror? And I don't know, maybe we need Ronan Sweeney and yourself, Johnny, to take them over and start.
Well, if it came to talking about it, we'd have a great team.
All right, Division 3 North, lads. Derry are on 4. They're guaranteed promotion. There are a whole load of, you know, mad results have to happen for that not to happen. They're on plus 35. Cavan are on 2. Fermanagh are on 2. Cavan played Derry this weekend. So, like, I mean, you know, like between Derry, Cavan and Fermanagh, it looks like Longford are gone. So, like, I mean, like I said, Cavan and Derry are on television at 3 o'clock. I mentioned Chrissy McCaig's gone in as a cornerback. He's beside Brendan Rodgers. Now, the two of them on a fullback line are as good as anywhere in the country. I really like their midfield. Conor Glass is back playing better this year. From reading reports, he looked a very rusty player last year, but he was only back from the AFL. He's a big lump of a lad. He's maybe not like a Conor McKenna who can just hit the ground running. Emmett Bradley, a very direct, bloody good player in midfield. So they have a solid midfield, full back line. Like you mentioned, Brendan McGuigan up front is in the very top tier of players. So they've an awful lot going for them, Brendan.
Yeah, you'd have to put McFall in there as well. Well, so yeah, just going back to Gallagher, of course, he's a lot to work with, but the mindset, the attitude, and you need a lot of ingredients, I think, boy, to push on to be a top team, right? You need a decent club structure and good club teams, which Derry have. So you need some finances, but you need the will of the county to be behind you. And just going back to what I was saying before, there's such an ingrained, tough club championship there that it's stopped. It's taken over. And as the county went down, it played more into that. That as Derry dropped the divisions, sure, what's the big thing about Derry then? You know, Derry were used to being up the top. Of course, we remember back the early 90s, all the ding-dongs with Donegal. Donegal won it in 92, they won it in 93. And Derry, many people said, should have won another one. They'd won a few leagues. They were right up there in the glory days. Very hard for a team to drop that far down, Willie, with the talent they have. So for Rory Gallagher to be in there now and put the right things in place, you know, there were stories, I think, at the end of the year or the start of the year there was a bit of a fallout, but I think it was the end of Lynn. And I think Gallagher's very critical in there and was snapping at people. And that's the word I was hearing back from the Derry camp. You know, he gives it to you in training, puts it up to you, but I guess he wants the right result. There was one or two guys couldn't really handle that, but it looks like now he's got the momentum going the right way. And a bit like we spoke about at the start of the show, Willie, you can't really energise a county until you start to bring back that bit of pride. So what comes first? It's really up to the team to come together and to build up the county and pull it back and get everybody in. And Geller looks like he is doing that. And just going back to Roscommon there, I suppose that was a tough wee league for them to go on. I feel for Longford as well. You know, you have Cavan in there, Ulster champions. You know, Fermanagh and Cavan just gone down last year from Division 2. And you put a rejuvenated Derry in there. So it was a tough wee year for Longford there too.
Yeah, no, and they're usually solid in Division 3. Division 3 South then, lads, we have Offaly on 4 points. All they have to do is avoid defeat and they should be in the top two. If Tipperary beat Offaly and Limerick beat Wicklow, which could easily happen, all three will be on 4 points. Offaly, Tipperary, Limerick. At the moment, Offaly are on plus 6, Tipperary plus 1, Limerick are on 0 score difference. So that's a fairly exciting group. We'll see how that comes down. Offaly are playing good football, you know, bringing Niall McNamee on as the impact sub. You get that age. But geez, Alan Brogan was on the show Monday. He was putting Conor McManus as the impact sub. I was like, what are you doing? Like, of course, especially Alan Brogan turned into an impact sub himself way too early. So I don't know what he was talking about. Division 4 North, This is probably the hardest division in all of them, relatively. Antrim flying it on 4 points. They've already qualified. Loud and Sligo both on 2. They play each other. It's a huge game, lads. Loud versus Sligo at home in Haggardstown. Obviously, Drogheda, I think, is under construction. This is on GAA Go for anyone who wants to watch it. Tony McEntee over Sligo has them moving fairly well. And obviously, Mickey Hart over Loud. They scored 19 points the last day. I was actually looking at this, like, because we obviously haven't seen Loud, and you'd be wondering how they're playing and if their team is anything to go by. Their half back line scored 3 points from play. Their midfield scored 1. Their half forward line scored 6 from play, and their full forward line scored nothing. So you can read into that, Johnny, whatever you want about what kind of style they're playing.
Yeah, well, I suppose them stats. Well, there's some days when you're in the full forward line, you end up being the supplier for whatever reason. So it's obviously, I don't know whether it's tactics or just one of those things that just happen on the day. But it makes for interest, and as you say yourself, it's relative. There's so much, you know, cutthroat business. There's excitement in every division, and
there is.
You know, it's a pity
how can there not be after two games?
Well, that's the thing.
Realistically,
yeah,
you know,
that's the thing. It's a pity we're not saying this after 6 or 7 games. But look at. It is what it is for this year, and you know, but it's exciting, and you will be, you know, I'll be at the game on Sunday, and I'll be watching the phone to see who's going where and what's going, you know. So you have an interest in every division, which is what the supporter wants to.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the south, this is the weird one. There's only 3 teams in this, lad. So Carlow were through. Carlow have only they've beaten Waterford, and then Waterford went and beat Wexford. So Carlow are playing Wexford and Dr. Cullen Park. You'd strongly fancy Waterford here, even though it's a local derby. Carlow are on 2 points, they've plus 15 score difference. Waterford are on 2 and Wexford on 0. So I suppose Wexford would want to beat Carlow by 15 points plus to have a chance to get the 3 teams on 2 points. Anyways, and actually there's only 3 teams and 2 of them go through. So it's a strange one there. So listen, that's it, lads. That's all the divisions. Thanks very much. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review all those games. There's obviously some brilliant games at the weekend, and we'll review them all on Monday. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Caffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.